ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey there, Sana Qadar here from All in the Mind. Check out our new series, Forensic. It's all about the psychological tools and tricks that come with investigating crime.
He was setting the bombs off in subways, in the New York Public Library, in movie theaters.
When you're testifying in court, rather than having purely your own memory, you take on all these little bits and pieces of information from different sources.
All in the Mind, Forensic. Search for All in the Mind on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, welcome to The Music Show on ABC Radio National. I'm Andrew Ford. We're in the world of Australian folk music on today's show. Later on, C. Benedict is reporting from the National Folk Festival in its 60th year. But first, Judy Small, a fixture of the Australian folk scene from the 1970s as a singer and songwriter, often quite political songs. In the late 1990s, she got herself a proper job working as a lawyer in family law. She'd originally trained as a psychologist, and she scaled back the singing accordingly. And then in 2013, she became a judge in the Federal Circuit and Family Courts, and she put away singing altogether, her final songs remaining unrecorded. But she's a judge no more, and she's recorded those songs, swan songs, she calls them, and she's here to talk about them. Let's introduce her with Stand or Fall, very Judy Small title.
Don't tell me that the time is wrong. Don't tell me that we're cheese and chalk. Don't tell me you can't sing this song. Don't tell me you can't walk this talk. Just tell me that you're on the road. Tell me that you just can't wait. Tell me that you'll share the load. Tell me that it's not too late. If you don't stand for something, stand up tall, you will fall for anything, anything at all. If you don't stand for something, stand up tall, you will fall for anything, anything at all. Don't tell me you're too old and grey. Don't tell me you're too young and hip. Don't tell me you're too straight or gay. Don't tell me you know all or sip. Just tell me that you're on the way. Tell me that you've got the taste. Tell me it's a brand new day. Tell me there's no time to waste. If you don't stand for something, stand up tall, you will fall for anything, anything at all. If you don't stand for something, stand up tall, you will fall for anything, anything at all. Aside. It's easier to let it go. It's easy to flow with the tide. It's easier to just say no. It's easier to sit it out. It's easy to watch from the rear. But is easy what it's all about? Is easy what brought us to here? If we don't stand for something, stand up tall, we will fall for anything, anything at all. If we don't stand,
that's Stand or Fall, and it comes from, what should we call it, an EP perhaps, called Swan Songs. It's the work of Judy Small, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her back to the music show after so long. We think last century, Judy.
I think it was. I don't remember talking to you for a very, I know I have, but it was a very long time ago.
Yeah.
It's lovely to be back, can I say.
It's great to have you back. It's not like actually you have been the whole of the time in between sort of treading the boards and out there performing, because you've been doing something else, which we will get to. But tell us about these two songs, which were written back in 2013.
That's right.
And are newly recorded. Why now?
Why now is an interesting question. I wish I'd recorded them when I first wrote them. My voice has gone. I have Lewy body disease, and it's taken my voice away, which has been, you know, as you can imagine, quite traumatic.
Yes.
And I decided that while I still could vaguely sing, I should record them. And I took a friend called Ruth Hazelton, who's a wonderful singer and songwriter herself, out to lunch and said, I think I want to record these songs and I'm not quite sure how to do it because I hadn't been in a studio since last century. So she, bless her, just organised the entire thing, became the project manager for Swan Songs. So we went into the studio and recorded these two last songs. And no, they don't sound like I did when I was in my heyday, but they're out there for other people to sing and to hear.
You say that you lost your voice. You're still recognisably you, you know.
Yes. Cognitively and interpersonally, I'm still okay. My singing voice doesn't have the control or the power or the resonance that it used to have. And my symptoms at the moment are mostly physical. It's mostly like Parkinsonian things, like tremor and balance. And I have some organisational problems too. But basically, I'm still fine. As my wife and my friends say, you're not demented yet.
No, but what I was saying, I meant the vocal personality is still you.
Right.
I think I would have known it was you singing. But let's talk about the songs themselves, because they're kind of typical Judy Small songs, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
We've heard Stand or Fall, which sort of speaks for itself.
Yes.
The other one maybe doesn't quite speak for itself, Yad Vashem, Within These Walls. Tell us about that one.
I'm not quite sure why I wrote it then. I mean, I wrote that in 2013, and things were different then than they are now in terms of the international relations and in terms of what's happening in the Middle East. I knew about Yad Vashem. I've never been there, but I had been to the Holocaust Memorial in Washington, D.C., which is a similar sort of place. And that had been a profoundly moving experience. And there was something, I'm a child of the Second World War. My father fought in the Second World War. And the shadow of the Holocaust, I think, falls over my whole generation. I was born after the war, but it was a very powerful message that came to my generation. And after I'd been to the memorial in Washington, it took some time to write this song, some years before it all came out. But the lessons of the Holocaust, I think now, ironically, it's probably more relevant than it was then. You know, the lessons of the Holocaust are needed so much now. You know, the idea that we are all one people, that it's ridiculous to see ourselves as different, and therefore that the differences that there are between us are worth killing people for. I mean, that's just a horrendous concept. And so I wrote this song knowing that I would get flack from both sides of the Middle Eastern argument, that I would get flack from right-wing Zionist people. And I make a very clear distinction, can I say, between Jewish people in general, the state of Israel, and the current government of Israel. I make a very clear distinction between all of those things.
This is a distinction that some people are incapable of.
Exactly, and that's very frustrating for me, this inability to hold two things that are true at the same time. You know, that for my part, this is my view, that I absolutely believe that the Jewish people deserve a safe and secure place to live, given the millennia of oppression and persecution that they've suffered. I also believe that the Palestinian people deserve the same thing, that they deserve a place of safety and security and self-government. And I believe that those two things are possible, but difficult. And I'm just very sad that we've ended up where we are now. You know, it's possible to say the attack by Hamas in October 2023 was horrendous. It was the largest mass killing of Jews since the Holocaust. That was an impossibly difficult thing to even comprehend. And to also hold the truth, or my truth, that the Israeli response to that was way over the top and that what they have done to Gaza is inexplicable and appalling, that those two things are able to be held together. And I know that some people will complain because I have used the word Palestinian towards the end of the song, and others will complain because they think I'm weaponizing the Holocaust. And my view of that is, well, if the Holocaust is not something to use as a weapon in the fight against oppression and inequality and for human rights, then what can we use?
There's sorrow in these walls, but defiance lives here too. In memory of the millions slaughtered by the few, here lives grief and here lives terror, here lives anguish, here lives shame. And those who walk within these walls will never be the same. On the streets of old Berlin, in the pavements set in brass, the names of all the families rounded up to face the gas. Chaim, Ruth and baby Yosef, schoolgirl Sarah, son Raphael. Their voices call within these walls, come listen here a while. Yad Vashem, Hashem, never to forget, at least we owe them that, Yad Vashem. Where was the hand of God in the camp and in the wood, in the overflowing chamber, grass spattered with blood, in the ever-smoking chimneys, in the ashes on the tide. Those voices howl within these walls and cannot be denied. Yad Vashem, who refuse to bow to terror, who refuse to live in fear. At the risk of their own lives, they held out firm and steady hands. Would we stand with them in courage? Would we sink in shifting sands? In the Palestinian towns, in the fields of Vietnam, in the villages of Ireland, human blood is all the same. To you who emphasize the difference, Christian, Muslim, Jew or Jain, come walk with me within these walls, you'll never be the same. Yad Vashem, Yad Vashem.
to forget, but we owe them more than that. Yad Vashem.
That's Within These Walls, Yad Vashem, and it's the work of Judy Small, who is my guest on today's music show. Let us go back to your childhood, can we?
Sure.
I mean, or at least your sort of teens,
yes.
your formative years. The folk song revival, which was happening in the late 1950s, early 1960s, was that something that you were aware of, part of, you know, was that the big inspiration, musically speaking?
Absolutely. I was 11, I think, when my sister brought home a Joan Baez record. And I was right there with it, heart, you know, body, soul and mind, from the first note she sang. And I actually used to stand in front of my bathroom mirror with my tennis racket, pretending it was a guitar, and singing along to the Joan Baez record that my sister had brought home. And then my brother brought home the Brothers Four and Glenn Tomasetti. And then Peter, Paul and Mary started being on the radio, and then the Seekers, and then Bob Dylan. And all of that I just absorbed like it was air. And my music is very much grounded in all of that and in the more political songs that came after that, the Phil Oakes, the Tom Paxton, the, you know, those sorts of things. And then, of course, the women's music, which was the protest folk music of the 70s. You know, I think the folk community doesn't really recognise that folk protest didn't die in the 70s, as some people say. The folk protest of the 70s was the music of the women's liberation movement. And that very much affected me too, because by then I was in my late teens and early 20s, and I absorbed all of that. So my music is a combination of the tradition of folk music, which is to tell the stories and make the statements of belief and encouragement of people, the politics of the women's movement. So all of that combined, together with what I hope is a healthy sense of humour, it's the foundation of my music.
And you've sung traditional stuff as well. And I wonder whether you feel that that tradition sort of runs through you.
Absolutely. If I have any regrets at all about my singing career, it's that I never made an album of traditional songs. I just never got round to it, really, Andy. But yes, that tradition is absolutely at the core of my music, because that's where it came from. You know, I always say that I think I'm a folky rather than a rock and roller, because Go Tell It on the Mountain means a lot more to an 11-year-old than I Can't Get No Satisfaction. You know, the music that tells stories, that's about people, that's about issues, was much more interesting to me, and it's formed the absolute core and basis of all my music ever since.
You're listening to The Music Show on ABC Radio National. I'm Andrew Ford, and I'm talking to Judy Small. Your songs are often about real people, aren't they? About real things.
Yes.
They're not sort of in just from your imagination.
No. Some of them are, and some of them have bits of imagination in them. But basically, yes, they're about real issues, about real people. People have sometimes said to me, oh, I didn't know that about your life. And I've said, well, it's not about my life. It's about someone else's life that they've told me about, or that I've read about, or that I've seen on television or whatever. But yes, my songs are not just about me and my feelings. They're about what I see around me in the world. And that's what folk music is. The job of the folk musician is to document our times in song. And I hope that's what I've been able to do. It's great to write fantastical songs, but mostly I get most satisfaction out of the songs that mean something and tell real people's stories.
Well, let's listen to one of those, the White Bay Paper Seller, which is one of your best-known songs.
Yes.
But for people who don't know it, tell us who the White Bay Paper Seller is.
Or was. She's
well,
not
was
with us
now,
anymore,
yeah.
Unfortunately. No. Her name was Beatrice Bush. And for years, for decades, she sold morning and evening newspapers at a place called White Bay in Sydney. And she was a tiny little woman. And she was there every morning and every evening, 7 days a week, for yonks. And I had never spoken to her, but I just knew who she was, and I knew that other people knew who she was. and that there were other people in Sydney of that sort of ilk. You know, there was Arthur Stace, who wrote the word eternity in beautiful copperplate writing on the pavements for years, and nobody knew who he was. You know, there are these characters in our cultures that everybody knows, but nobody really talks about much. And it just seemed a right thing to do, the right time to write a song about Beatty Bush.
There must be a million stories in that weather-beaten face, but in all the years I've watched her, I've never heard her voice slipping in between the cars, but never in the way. She sells the daily papers on the corner. Her shoes are built for comfort as she marches up and down. A little wizened figure, scarcely more than skin and bone. She looks as though the wind's about to sweep her right away as she sells the daily papers on the corner at White Bay. And the pennies that she makes will help to fill the pension void, for it's not the love of working keeps her constantly employed. 7 days a week she's there just to earn her meagre pay by selling daily papers on the corner. Like Sally with her costume bag, or the man with his four-wheeled cart, or the man who wrote Eternity, she's a beat of Sydney's heart. And I wonder if she knows that people think of her this way as she sells the daily papers on the corner at White Bay. And the pennies that she makes will help to fill the pension void, for it's not the love of working keeps her constantly employed. 7 days a week she's there just to earn her meagre pay by selling daily papers on the corner.
The White Bay Paper Seller, that's Judy Small's song, and that was Judy Small singing it, and Judy Small is my guest on today's music show. As you say, she's no longer with us, but the song is.
Indeed.
And that's one of the things about folk songs, isn't it? That's one part of their function, is to kind of memorialise events and people.
Yes. And one of the lovely things about that song was we invited Beatty to come to the concert in the Sydney Town Hall where I was launching the album that that song is on, and she came. And it was the first time she'd ever been to the Sydney Town Hall. She'd lived in the inner suburbs for her whole life, and she'd never been to the Sydney Town Hall. And I asked her whether she liked the song, and she said yes, she liked it a lot because a lot more people bought papers and she could go home early, which I thought was wonderful.
That's fantastic. So people were seeking her out after your song.
That's right. Well, the lovely Clive Robertson played it to death on the morning program on the ABC in Sydney, bless him. But the other thing about that song was I had the enormous honour of being asked to go to Sydney to sing it at her funeral.
Oh.
And that was a wonderful experience. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, folk songs are also a way of keeping records, aren't they?
Yes. Well, as I said, it's about documenting our times. It's so that things are not forgotten. And so that things that are not usually part of the media are not forgotten. It's about ordinary people. It's about people like us. I never set out to write songs about the world. I set out to write songs about things that I saw. And what I realised after a while was that the things that I saw were also the things that other people saw. and felt and heard. So that tradition is very much part of folk music. It's been an enormous privilege, it really has, to be able to do that, to be able to be part of that tradition for so long. I mean, it's more than 50 years since I started singing in the Sydney Folk Clubs. I can't believe that, but it is. And it's been an amazing ride all the way through.
Let's talk about the other career that you've had as a lawyer and then as a judge.
Yes, I was indeed Judge Judy.
Yes. I wasn't going to go there.
No, but other people do, I'm sure they do.
Yes. As a singer, as a songwriter, as any kind of artist, you come up with things that are unique. I mean, nobody else would have written exactly your songs and they wouldn't have sung them like you. Is there something of that in being a judge as well?
There is. What I used to say, people would say, well, what's it like being a judge after being a performer? And I'd say, well, there are similarities and there are differences. Being on the bench is a little bit like performance, except that this time you don't have to impress them, they have to impress you, and nobody claps at the end. But otherwise, it is about connection with people. Ronnie Gilbert, who was the wonderful woman who was the voice of the Weavers back in the 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, when she was in Australia in 1986 and I was touring with her, a reporter in Adelaide asked her why she was still doing this stuff. She was nearly 60 at the time. And I expected her to talk about the politics and the movement and the stories and all of that. And she said, I do it because I can create moments between me and an audience that help us both go on. And that's very much part of what my music's been about, the connection between me and an audience. And that's one of the things I miss most, Andy, is not being able to perform because that connection can't be made anymore. And of course, the connection between a judge and the courtroom ought to be a similar sort of connection. It's more formal, of course, but it ought to be as real, in my view. A judge should not be just the person sitting up on the bench, inhuman or cold or whatever. I think a judge, particularly as I was in the family law jurisdiction, I think a judge needs to make people understand that the judge gets it, that they understand what's going on, they understand what the experience is like for the litigants. So that was very much part of my practice as a lawyer and as a judge. And I think I did get some of that from being a performer.
Is it to do with listening?
Yes, absolutely it's to do with listening. To do with listening and thinking and understanding. I think that's a big part of it.
Mm. What about now? How do you stay connected to this folk tradition now that you're no longer singing? Do you have people that you admire and go and listen to?
Are there absolutely
people we should keep our ears out for?
Oh, yes. I went to the National Folk Festival this year. They asked me to sing because it was the 60th National Folk Festival. And I was quite surprised and a bit dismayed to realise that I'd sung at the 17th. My first National Folk Festival was the 17th one. But when I told them that I was no longer singing because my voice was no longer reliable, they asked me to come as a special guest to speak at forums and to introduce my songs at concerts that other people would sing. And that was an incredible honour. And I did that. And it was a great experience. So I feel very connected. And I actually did something which some people would say was crazy. On the last day, there was a 60 years of queer folk concert. And one of the other performers was going to sing one of my songs, but they got food poisoning the night before. And I just thought, well, I can't have a 60 years of queer folk concert without one of my songs. So I took my fears and my trepidation in my hands and borrowed a guitar and croaked out one of my songs. And the audience was just wonderful. They sang along with me. They even prompted me when I forgot the words and then gave me this incredibly touching and indeed tear-inducing standing ovation at the end because we all knew that that was the last time I was ever going to perform on a folk stage. So I do feel very connected to the folk scene. The other thing I've been doing in the last year or so is making contact with a lot of people that I've met during my travels here and overseas and telling them how much their music has meant to me. And I've reconnected with several of those people in a very personal and wonderful way. And that's been really, what's the word? It's lifted my spirits enormously. And I am going to see people. You know, I still go to see people like Chris Mitzi, who I think is a wonderful, wonderful singer-songwriter. He also has the absolute talent of telling people's stories in a way that gets right through any of the sort of intellectual defences you have against hearing what other people's lives are about. And I've been to see Kavisha Metsela lately. I've been to see Grace Petrie, who is a young English, very bolshy political singer-songwriter, who I just love to bits. So I do still go and see. I'm going to see Christina Olsen in a month or so, who's an American singer-songwriter who's also very quirky and funny, and it's a great gig to go and see. So I am still involved in that way. I don't go to folk clubs much, although I have. But yes, I feel I play a lot of music at home, you know, other people's music. I listen to music. One of the things that happened when I went back to the law, when I went into the law, was that I stopped really listening to music because the law takes up a lot of your headspace. You know, you're reading fairly intense stuff most of the time. And while I heard music, I hadn't really listened to it for a very long time. I practiced law, including being a judge, for about 25 years. And after that, I got back into really listening to the music, and I've so enjoyed that. And I have discovered a whole lot of new people, like Windborne, who were at the festival, wonderful quartet from America who sing everything from Hungarian folk songs to political folk songs of the 60s and 70s to singer-songwriters like Rose Betts from England, you know, Irish Mython, Canadian singer-songwriter who now lives in Denmark, but people that weren't around when I was around, when I was singing overseas. And it's just so wonderful to see that tradition continuing. And of course it will continue. For as long as people have lives and for as long as people sing, there will always be folk music.
That's the place to stop, I think, on that note of hope and positivity. Judy Small, thank you very much indeed for coming back on The Music Show. It's lovely to catch up. Lovely to talk to you.
Thank you, Andy. It's been a real pleasure.
You who scribble on walls with your minuscule minds, you who make midnight calls, you who rattle my blinds, the violence you preach is the core of your creed. Well, you don't speak for me. You call yourselves patriots, swastika style. You feed on the fear of the ignorant child. There's no love of nation, nor people, or land in the hatred behind your smile. You don't speak for me. No, you don't speak for me. I've seen where you come from, I've seen where you lead. It's a poisonous fruit that grows from your seed. You stir up the hatred till something explodes. Well, you don't speak for me. You who slaughter free creatures and then call it sport, you proudly display the corpses you've shot. You talk about freedom and rights and control, but you don't speak for me. You who poison the airwaves with Genghis Khan views, you broadcast your bias and call it the news. You say that you speak for the millions out there and deny that you're lighting a dangerous fuse. Well, you don't speak for me. No, you don't speak for me. You don't speak for me. You don't speak for my friends. We've followed that line. Seen where it ends. Intolerance, hatred, division and strife. You don't speak for me. You who march in your hundreds of thousands for peace, you who work for political prisoners' release, you who fight the injustice of women ignored. You speak for me. You who combat apartheid wherever it's seen, you who struggle to keep the forests green, you fight for the rights of all people in chains. You speak for me. Yes, you speak for me. You speak for me.
Judy Small and You Don't Speak for Me. You're listening to The Music Show on ABC Radio National. I'm Andrew Ford. As you would have heard when I was talking with Judy, the National Folk Festival turned 60 this year. Producer C. Benedict goes every year as a kind of talent scout, finding the new crop of Australian folk artists for the music show. And they were on the ground this year and found a few weird and wonderful corners of the festival to bring us. C, hello.
Hi, Andy. The best thing about the Nash for me is the way that you see musical ideas that have like literally never been put together before side by side. And this year I saw a perfect example of that. So you've got to imagine four different hammered dulcimers in a row. So those are these flat laid string instruments that are struck with various kinds of mallets, and they exist in different forms all over the world. So I saw a Turkish santur next to a Persian santur, next to a Ukrainian timbali, next to a Transylvanian cymbalom, and all the players kind of finding a way to fit together despite serious challenges of tunings and style. Mariam Rahmani is the Iranian musician who was playing the santur, so I went around the festival to try to find her and talk to her about it.
It was amazing to see it, and, you know, like we play in a row, so you could hear the quality and the timbre and the technique that we can use or we cannot use. Like cymbalom, I think she said she can tune it chromatically, like different, I won't do that, I can't do that. Or Hungarian one, the way they had felt to, you know, it was all so different in techniques. And even santur, when they use it in different countries, like China, they also have it. I think they always change it in a way that suits their repertoire. So they can fit their repertoire and play with it. One of the most beautiful things about this festival is that we can have that conversation, and we can, you know, there's a space and no one judge you. Everyone, like, you know, everyone just so open. And yeah, I think that was the highlight for me, being able to easily go to a musician. And, you know, each time we play, someone comes like, hey, I played this, do you want to do a jam? And I was like, wow, I've never seen this anywhere else. Like, you know, yeah, it's amazing. For me, it was so lovely to see all, like, how this traveled and changed with Cynthia Romers and go all the way to Europe.
Yeah, it's done an incredible journey. And I mean, we can hear in the background here, there's trad rave going on in the background of this conversation.
So
and it just, you know, the National Folk Festival is this place where, you know, everyone I've been talking to has been talking about what a living tradition it is. Where does your playing fit into that living tradition?
Honestly, I find it always really hard because the music I play is really like classical, and because I always say is I think you need to have a background to be able to enjoy the traditional music of a specific place. Maybe folk music, it could be a bit different. By the way, they normally is simple melodies or more rhythm. Even in Iran is the same, but traditional music is just different scene, you know. It's not a scene that you just, you know, play in a, I don't know, a festival like this. So when I meant to come here, I was just so excited, but also kind of scared, like, oh, does that fit in? But I think also is a nice balance when you got a lot of dance and you got a, you know, then you can just chill on one of those beautiful bags, like sleep bags, and, you know, listen to a music that could be more calming or needs more attention.
And the way that you play is very, very technical and very traditional in some ways, but you've got kind of flamenco and you've got all of these other elements in there. And playing and singing at the same time, how traditional is that?
That is not. Like, I don't know any santur player who sing as well that much. It's not a... normally, because especially Iranian singing, you need a lot of techniques, and, you know, you do a lot of I don't know what's the word in tahrir, decoration with your voice, and you need to really sit in a good way and concentrate, and, you know, and playing at the same time and sing. I think it's just my thing, because I really love just expressing, and I'm not a singer, I always say I just love to express my emotion with singing. And poems is really important for me. And even I always say when I play, I always sing the poems in my head. That's the way I play it. And even when I do rhythmic, I sing the poem in my head that has got a rhythm, and I play the rhythm in my, you know. So it's always for me, the poems is first, and then music comes after. It's, for me, it's always music gonna tell you what the poems wanna say, just nicer.
Mariam Rahmani, and that's the sound of her santur in a piece called Encanto. Words like traditional and authentic are always haunting conversations around folk music. But what about folk itself? If you're running a folk festival, you've got to have a working definition of the word.
Folk is doing. Folk is doing music, it's doing dancing, it's doing connection with others, and through those shared experiences, making a stronger Australia, really.
That's the co-artistic director of the festival, Holly Downs. I'm not sure whether a transcontinental dulcimer jam would have been on the agenda back in 1966 when the National Folk Festival started, but it was always looking to fill gaps in the musical life of Australia. I asked Holly to give us a bit of the history.
Originally, the Folk Festival was started by several students down in Melbourne, kind of looking at the sorts of types of music that were being promoted in Australia at the time. It was noticeably quite anti-commercial. So we were seeing a lot of kind of commercial music being brought in from overseas and being presented in Australia. So the folk movement was big in America and in other places, and people here in Australia were looking for something similar. So a lot of those early festivals were coming from a bit of a social justice place, an environmental awareness. The challenges of the time were what people wanted to sing about, and so the organisers of that first event were really looking to make space for that, and it gathered momentum quite quickly and would travel between different states. So different volunteer organising committees would put on the National Folk Festival in all of our different capital cities across the states and territories, and also a few regional centres. And as it grew, both in size and scope, there came a time to have a real home that made the logistical side of things far more straightforward. Because if you can imagine trying to turn on an event of this size now at a different venue every year, it's just very complex. So Canberra was chosen, and it's been the home here in Canberra since the early 90s. We really see it as kind of the annual gathering or annual flowering of what is actually an ongoing community that happens all through the year, with small folk clubs, with smaller regional festivals, town-based festivals, and this is just like all of those ones coming together for the big gathering. And the testament to it still existing comes from the fact that its roots were gathered across the country. There are still people who have come from across Australia to be here, and it's become something that it means a lot to generations of folkies now. So it's great to see them all here this year.
And this year you've got a peace concert, you've got groups from all over the world playing. It is an incredibly difficult thing to navigate, the kind of tensions between cultures and different diasporas in Australia right now. What is your approach to that?
People from all sorts of cultural backgrounds are applying for the festival, and just making sure that there is a little bit of space for everybody is a real priority. You know, I think people know the power of music to share and find common ground. The peace concert, which was just this morning in the Buttawang, will have done a lot towards bringing people together. You know, I think it's a very peace-loving kind of community in that way, and it's all of the artists who've come from diverse cultures who are, you know, currently back in their homelands, might be experiencing great trauma, are here to share hope and peace and their cultures respectfully with each other.
National Folk Festival co-artistic director Holly Downs. Zev Aviv describes themselves as a folk Nepo baby. They've been coming since they were 18 months old, and various members of their family have been involved in organising the festival, just as Zev is now.
I kind of think of this festival as a really large family reunion, like the one with all the weird aunts and uncles that and the cousins you never see. So some things are always the same, but yeah, it's always changed. Over the years, the kids busking has happened earlier and earlier. It used to only happen when everyone ran out of pocket money. But there is another sort of generation coming up and are playing because they want to be playing, not just because they've run out of their pocket money.
There was a kid yesterday I saw playing the harmonica, and every time someone passed, they pointed at their hat with the money in it and gave full sort of like deadly eye contact about it. Do you think the kids are more entrepreneurial these
days?
Oh,
definitely, yes. Yeah, absolutely. There's it's a bit depressing on the one hand that they're trying to hustle right from the beginning. It used to be that there was a lot more, the busking towards the end of the day was kids playing with whatever object they'd spent their pocket money on but weren't good at yet. And so on the last day you'd often have just piercing whistles and and people failing at devil sticks, the Diablo things. And
oh, yeah.
But now it feels like there's more players, which is really lovely as well. Even if all they're doing is playing open chords on their fiddle for half an hour.
You've got to start somewhere.
Or singing songs. Or it's both lovely and a bit distressing that the kids are hustling from so early on, but it's nice to have them around.
And some of the buskers don't just take the money and run. Some of them end up on big stages, like Louisa Hickey from Appaline.
I was very, very small the first time I came to the Nash. Me and my sibling Tess, who plays in our band Appaline as well, we came for the first time with the community group, the Melbourne Scottish Fiddle Club, which saw us playing on some of the big stages at the Nash when I was probably 8 years old. And we spent our time either doing gigs or busking on the street or probably running around being a nuisance.
There are some really small buskers here. I've seen a kid who might be 6 or 7 playing the fiddle who looks like his soul is leaving his body.
Yeah.
Is that you?
Yes, very much. I had terrible concentration face as a child. I hope I've gotten better. But yeah, we had such a good time busking on the street. Great way to make friends, and I specifically remember Ado, the fiddle player from Trouble in the Kitchen, the band, coming and giving us a $10 note. That is a very strong memory in my head of being so excited that this fantastic fiddle player was listening to us play. Peak moment of my life. There's something about folk festivals where you wander around, let your ears take you where they want to go. I would not be the player I am today if I hadn't gone to the festival and heard all these fantastic bands that inspired me to get better at my instrument, to practice, and inspired us to start a band in the first place. It is such an integral part of sustaining music and the musical traditions. I feel like we're in a very unique spot in Australia because you're always getting influenced by other genres and things, and so there's some people that are very, very skilled in very traditional playing, and there's also this other beautiful world of fusion that really comes alive at the National Folk Festival, where everything kind of converges all at once. And it's an interesting journey to go on of finding where your soul sits within different kinds of music that, you know, have come from different places. And some of the music I play is not from my heritage, some of it is. I feel like it's going to be a journey I'm on for the rest of my life, is discovering where I sit musically in the folk world.
I walked past a harp, some juggling pins, a drum, some crocheted bunting, some knives, quite a lot of knives actually. Hello, who are you and what are you doing?
Hi, my name is Octave the Bard. I'm one of two medieval bards that are in this tent performing at the Nash.
Okay, so what does a bard do?
As a very concise version, bards originally were the keepers of family stories. They then progressed a little bit to being the people that tell the stories and share the music. Nowadays, bards in popular culture, they crack wise jokes and they play instruments occasionally. And that's essentially what we do. It's a culmination of music performance, circus, and storytelling all wrapped into one. And then the part that we serve at a lot of these events is we're a safe space. We're a space to sit, relax, enjoy, learn, participate.
And if I can, like, quite literally lift the curtain for a second,
yeah.
You've got your tent set up here. You've got the harp, the instruments, the knives, as I've said, out here. But this is where you're going to be for the entire long weekend, right?
Absolutely. Behind the curtain that is in the middle of the tent is my bedding setup and all of our food and everything. Nod and I sleep in the tent because it's fun and authenticity is interesting.
So is this how the bards were hundreds of years ago?
Absolutely not. What we consider bards nowadays is incredibly different. We are roaming performers. A bard would be tied to a household, would be paid to live somewhere and tell the stories. Basically an annoying guy you kept in your house, whereas we're annoying guys that turn up wherever you are, which I think is better.
And talk to me about the repertoire. What are you playing?
So I do a lot of improvised work in different styles, a classic medieval style, some Celtic music, some modern with a harp twist. One of our most loved songs is Thunderstruck by AC/DC and All Star by Smash Mouth. They go really well on a harp.
But it's can I ask you to demonstrate a bit of that? Can I have a bit of
which
that?
Which one would you like?
Oh, let's go for Smash Mouth.
Yeah. Hey now, you're an old star, get your game on, go and play. Hey now, you're a rock star, get your show on, get paid. And all that glitters is gold. Only shooting stars break the mold.
Octave the Bard with apologies to Smash Mouth.
Sue Benedict at the National Folk Festival in Canberra earlier this year. Tickets for 2027 are already available, and that's true of a lot of the smaller music festivals in Australia. Booking tickets well in advance is the kind of thing that helps keep these small festivals going. The music show is produced by Sue Benedict and Sky Kirkham. Technical production this week from Emrys Cronin and Timothy Jenkins. The show's made on Gadigal, Gundungurra and Wurundjeri Woi Wurrung country. And a reminder, the music show will be at the Sydney Writers' Festival on the 21st of May. On stage with me will be Ziggy Ramo, Leah Senior and Kate Fagan. We'll be talking words and music, and you'll find details of the gig on our website. And you can hear it on ABC Radio National in a few weeks' time. Coming up on the show, we've got, well, quite a crop of international bands who are coming to Australia for the winter festival season between Dark Mofo and Rising and Vivid. There's quite a lot on. And we will be hearing from Kay Tempest and Tortoise and Mogwai. And the guitarist Hilary Geddes on her latest release from her quartet. She's going to be performing from it live for us in the studio. It's a beautiful album. She's about to launch it with a bunch of gigs. Maybe one of them is near you. The details, of course, are on our website. Here's some of the album. It's called Red Leaf. Thank you.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.